Sounds good.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us. My name is Daryl Urbanski, your host, as always. And today we are joined by Caroline Michaela Sue, a dynamic and accomplished leader in the cybersecurity realm. As the VP of Customer Success for APJ at KnowBe4, Caroline brings over 16 years of expertise in marketing, customer success, and digital leadership. She's a champion in driving human behavioral changes that bolster cybersecurity, partnering with large organizations to fortify their defenses against digital threats. With a rich background that includes roles at Gartner and Lazada and an impressive array of certifications in security awareness, design thinking, and Scrum, Caroline is a visionary in integrating technology and human insights to create a safer digital world. I've asked her to join us here today to share her story and insights into this ever-evolving field. So Caroline, thank you so much for joining us today. How are you?
Doing great, Daryl, and thank you for having me on the show.
Yeah, it's an honor and a pleasure to have you here. And I want to ask, before we dive into some of the nuts and bolts of the stuff, how did you even get started? This is a bit of a behavior change, customer success, a lot of the stuff. It's not a nurse, not an engineer, it's not a doctor. How did you get into this sort of field? Is this something that you knew you wanted to do from a young age? Is it something that your parents did before? Did you stumble into it? How did you even get going in this field?
Cybersecurity space is relatively new in this age, right? So imagine, I'm not going to reveal my age, or maybe I will later. But when I was a kid, I probably was dreaming that I'm going to be a policewoman, a detective.
Right.
But yes, I was already intrigued with the forensic science of things, like how to get to the details and all that thought. But if you ask me what was my dream when I was a kid, so frankly, that dream just shifted along the years, right? So to give a bit more of a context, at KnowBe4, this is the ninth company that I've joined. So I've got a very diverse background. And what I started with is that I should always enjoy coming to work. Right? Like I
so
want to
much.
find that sport. It is, and it's such a rare trait that an individual can enjoy the work that they're doing and yet get paid for it, right? Yeah, it is. And it's been a self-discovery process whereby having studied and majored in chemistry at NUS, I went on to take an accountancy certification in ACCA and landed a job in marketing. So my journey really started from a self-discovery journey whereby over the years, it shifted and I saw the trends that's uprising from like the research advisory space to the IT sector, whereby back in 2019, when I was with a market intel boutique firm, we got a lot of clients asking, what's happening in the IT space? So that really piqued my interest. And so I landed up in Gartner and as a customer success manager. And it just went from there into the technology realms, into an AI startup, whereby I started the customer success function from scratch. Then later on, joined Lazada to lead the team. And after at this current company, where I was a VP customer relations, working with mega accounts, like huge organizations, before I got recently promoted to this role as a VP customer success to manage the region out here. So yes, it's been a journey of self-discovery. So I wouldn't say that I intentionally placed myself from the onset in cybersecurity.
Right.
But yes, especially at KnowBe4, it's an intersection between technology and human, because we're talking about security culture here. So yeah, that's in a nutshell, like it wasn't totally intentional, but yes, landed the role because of the great company culture. The Glassdoor ratings was over the moon. So yeah, it's an offer that I couldn't refuse.
That's fantastic. And what were some of the biggest challenges? Was it all sunshine and rainbows, or it sounds like there were some lessons in there? I noticed that you went back to school for your finance degree. Your micromasters in finance. So why, obviously we all want to continue building our skills and learning, but for you, what have been some of the biggest challenges that you've had to overcome that have helped fuel what you learn, what your continued learning?
For me, when I took the Clifton strengths, one of my top strengths was a learner, right? So I'm someone who always wants to learn something. So it wasn't for the intention of the MicroMasters bridging a gap that I took it up. It was out of interest as well for a personal basis. And took a couple of modules, about three modules passed, and And then when I took on new roles, the workload did get quite a big hectic. So the MicroMasters is like KIV for now. But I do intend to finish it up and get into the alumni because it's a great and efficient way to be part of MIT alumni. Yeah, I'm looking forward to doing that just to check off the box and say that, okay, I'd be an alumni of an Ivy League school.
And what do you feel were some of the challenges, though, like in the career? Has it just been sunshine and rainbows and the skies parting and it raining money and success on you? Or there's been things that you've had to overcome and learn? What have been some of the big learning curves that you've had to face?
Definitely the biggest learning curves, I think you can consider it as milestones. So the first job, right? So being the first job when you're a newbie out there, it's like you have to be really detailed and meticulous. So it was a marketing role, but there's a lot of logistics and coordination behind it. And as my boss back then said, it's not all glamorous, 1% glamorous affairs. And the rest of it, it's really, I would say, S word, but that's pretty much that kind of workload that you have to cope with when you're in marketing. So that was like a very steep learning curve, because when you're in FMCG, that's where you get to learn about a lot of those sales and marketing promotional mechanics. So yeah, first job. And then gradually, there's a part of, okay, is it still sufficient enough to keep me interested? Marketing, right? Because there's branding and various aspects. But I find myself wondering, what's behind the strategy element? Where are all the data? And for marketers back then, it was so frustrating. If I would get data, I need to pay for it. So there's always a question of budget. And we couldn't get enough data out there to actually do an informed strategy. And that's why the rationale to move from pure marketing to a market research company. So that's when I joined GfK. So that's a German market research company. And that's when I was working on the Samsung key account out here in the region, where it was a huge challenge in the sense that we had to set up a function from scratch, me and my director. And we were managing likewise the APJ region. We had a certain portfolio to manage and certain growth to maintain as well. So that part really threw me into that, okay, I need to brush up on my people skills. Because when you're in marketing, it's like you are looking at copies, you're looking at like writing scripts, etc. But you're not exactly presenting all the time. It's like your boss is having a presentation, right? So as someone who's developing into a career, I was pretty much blessed to have a great mentor when I was in GfK. So her name is Julie. And she would actually put me up for success by training me up for presentations, you know, going into the room and letting me repeat like slides after slides. What's your intention? How do you think about it? Do you actually do a recording for yourself? Do you listen to yourself? So it was a lot of hard work. It was a lot of grinding, not just a presentation in that aspect, but also connecting the dots. Because while we all know clients can be demanding, so when you're in market research company, and especially when you're talking about brand share, the client is going to ask, why are you telling me this? What's the trend that you're telling me? How did it happen? What does it mean for me? So I had to learn very quickly about being outcome-driven and that perspective. So there's a lot of that grinding as well, to like, how do I actually connect the dots and make a story and make it valuable for my clients? But that's really when that capabilities to do storytelling develop. And frankly, it's an underutilized skill set for most people out here, or people that I've come across. Because when you want to spin a story that connects with the individuals, that's when it sells. So that's something, a skill set that anyone can benefit from. So learn it from that job, further enhance it along the way. And I would say that I'm still not an expert at it today. It's a skill set that's continuously being developed, because there's so many different perspectives that you need to consider. And what is the most valuable conversation story to tell right now? So that's a part, like this is like a tango, right, between our audience and myself. So I'll say that this is a skill set that I'm still fine tuning, but I hope that I'm definitely better than when I was a decade ago.
Yeah, there's no summit to this mountain. The more I learn, the more I realize how little I know. Speaking of how little we know, can we talk about some of the fundamentals? You talked about learning the mechanics and the nuts and bolts of marketing and sales. And then you said you worked for a market research company. Can you maybe speak to what are the fundamentals of market research for people that maybe are just some of the listeners, they may not know their market as well as they think they do. what would you consider like fundamental market research? What are the indicators? Talk about not being able to access enough of the data or the right data. Where should people begin? What do they need to know?
First of all, the methodology behind it, right? So back when in my second job, when I was with a media owner, when we were selling to agencies, they would always ask, what's the rationale of why you're quoting this rate cut, right? And certain stations are more expensive than other media as well. What's the rationale behind it? What's your footfall? So you need to have a precise targeted measurement of how you're measuring all these metrics, how many eyeballs, right? It's, that ties back to the traffic. So with that, we also look at how you are collecting and based on sample size. So a good gauge of sample size is about 300 to 500 per market research as well. So if you're doing a case study and you want to get, let's say, consumers' feedback and all that, 300 to 500, that would be a good gauge for you to do any customized research. Of course, the more granular that you break down into segments, then a larger base of sample size that you need. Theoretically, if the sample size, when you slice it up, if I recall correctly, I think it's about like a sample size of 50 or 30, whereby if you go lower than that, your data is not so spot on.
Right.
So that's where we also have to be mindful about what your sample size is. So going back to market research, though, a lot of usage for it could be, I want to go to market. So how do I develop my go-to-market strategy? What are the channels allocation? Who are the retailers out there, the brands out there? So what are the pricing as well? If I want to do a production, what's my factory strategy? Because my production strategy is also tying back to the regulations in the countries.
Mm-hmm.
So that was when I was with Frontier Strategy. So they actually specialize in macroeconomics and market intelligence. And we were advising by APEC presidents and the leadership team during their business review on a quarterly basis of what's the market going to look like and the regulations, like the trade war tension and everything, right? What does it mean for us in terms of numbers? So you need to get a good sense also of the market's volatility so as to be able to factor in how do I budget for how I scale up or scale back in the coming year. So that's a conversation that we have with the clients as well, just to give a snapshot of various market research studies. And of course, customized research, whatever the client wants to find, like even certain sustainability packaging, is it going to fly off well with the clients? So that's something. And also about, it could even go to cold supply chain where you are doing medical shipments and all that, where's the best place to set up shop? So yes, market research can go into a lot of avenues. Whatever you can dream of, we can do a market research on it.
No, fair enough. It sounds really clear. So just to repeat back, and also I'll include some of what our research did. I mentioned before, I think we spent a ton of money going through all the academic literature to figure out what are the critical success factors in small and medium-sized businesses. And one of the eight that we discovered was market intelligence, market research. And so what you said really corroborates what we've discovered. Part of it is you need to know what problem you're trying to solve in the market, why it's a problem, and then who wants the problem solved and why. And I think there's an unspoken word here. You talked about sample size. A lot of people, they launch a business and then they can't get customers. And I feel like just the exercise of getting 300 to 500 responses for your market research alone is incredibly powerful for these businesses, where if they can't get 30 to 50 answers as a base, which you said, so as a base minimum for a good sample size, for a broad, probably 12 plus data points, if not more, you want 300 to 500 responses. But for a specific segment, it sounds like a specific question, kind of 50, 30 minimum. Otherwise, it's in a group of 100,000 people, there's so many colors of the rainbow in terms of wants, likes, dislikes. You have to have a really tight target that you're sampling. So I think that was such a great benchmark for people to think, is that whatever they're going to do, whatever they're going to like research, they're going to think, they have to get elicit feedback from the specific target market they're targeting, the people, and also the stakeholders. So who are the affected actors? What are the stereotypes? What are the population size estimates in terms of demographics, psychographics? What's the cost of not fixing it? You talked about the cold chain versus right, and different types of supply chain. What's the problem? What are the problem liabilities, short-term, long-term? What are the realized costs, the unrealized costs? You also talked about knowing what channels and what competitors. So who are the top 10 competitors? What's their sales data? Where are their locations? Who is their target market? What are their offers and price points? What are the industry benchmarks? And as something that I actually hadn't thought of, because we had emergent trends in technology and of course, finishing the strategic plan, but I never really considered the regulations and the geopolitical trends. I think that is a fantastic addition because that's so impactful. Obviously, technology is important, but what's coming down the pipeline for regulation and what international, we all went through with COVID, some geopolitical issues that shut down the world, so to speak. So some things move slower and have big ramifications. So I really love that insight, that input. Now, what about marketing and sales? What would you recommend to someone who's maybe starting out or struggling? So we told them, listen, you got to get 30 to 50 responses minimum. You really want to go for 300 to 500. You also need to know all this other data about the industry to know what you're getting into to go to market and how your product fits into this scenario. Otherwise, you're just hope, and hope is not a strategy. So if someone's done this research now, when it comes to marketing and sales fundamentals, what would you recommend to someone starting out or struggling?
Someone starting out and struggling, well, the first point is get feedback, right? Because you need a baseline, like why are you struggling first? If not, how do you improve from there? No baseline, no improvement. So we have to look at what's fundamentally wrong with it. And coming back to that marketing and sales aspect, so one thing that's actually, I think, very top of mind these days is about breaking down silos within organizations. So we talk about the customer journey, right? Like the customer profiling. Now, when you work with an MSC, at times they tend to think from inside out instead of outside in as well. What's the touch points that we have that we're engaging clients on? And who actually leads this conversation about customer journey, right? And are we actually talking to product, to sales, to every single division? Because it's not just a front end, like the client facing people who are part of that customer journey process, but actually the back end support makes a significant difference. So for example, help desk, IT, etc., and also the internal user experience, like your employees, if their efficiency can be ramped up, they can better serve the clients that they are engaging as well. So there's that outside in approach as well. And when we look at how we are approaching customer journey, there's oftentimes, right, these days, like, oh, I just come up with a single profile and it's enough to cover all countries or regions. But the thing is that every country is unique. So one of the biggest challenges, as you mentioned earlier on, aside from challenges I face within my own role, is about like how do we actually align with the different nuances among the countries, especially out here in APJ. It's so unique. Like every country that you speak to, everyone thinks that I'm totally, don't treat me like a rat.
Yes.
Don't give me that plan, right? Yeah. And you have to factor that in, and also the ecosystem players as well. Because for example, let's talk about security culture and being cyber safe. So last year, $1.4 trillion was lost in scams, right, for the end users. It's huge globally. And in Singapore, each Singaporean who actually, or a case that was locked in, the losses was over 5,000 Sing dollars as well. So it's significant because per user, like who's getting scammed the most per user is Singapore, right? And then afterwards, you look at what is the government doing? So we set up like there's the cybersecurity agency. People are talking about let's roll out like lessons, educatory tutorials, etc. And also you can see those safeguards starting to be put in place. Like right now for CPF, they're saying that, okay, you can only draw like $2,000 a day, right? Because people are falling for those scams, right? And so these are the ecosystem player. If the government is not stepping in, agencies are not stepping in, the banks are not stepping in, then as an end consumer, it's like the guardrails and all that. I can depend on myself, but it's not that fast because a person's attitude and habits doesn't change overnight. And it takes a long time. We work organizations day in and out, and their biggest hurdle is how could I push out all those training and phishing to all my users? And they are not pushing back and say, why are you doing this to me? It's like, I have enough of my plates, and they don't see the value of it, right? Or they see it, but they are very cautious. Oh, these are the sort of topics I can send across my users, but those are a bit too sensitive. I can't. But the thing is that, you know what? The bad actors at the end of the day, they don't care about how sensitive it is. They're going to use it to their advantage and use all those emotional triggers that social engineering tricks and tips does. In fact, one of my clients, he's got a diploma in hypnosis. And so he's quite into the psychological aspect of things. Back in Melbourne, we were at the cyber conference in October, and he was sharing a session about the psychology of a cyber crime. And he broke it down. Let's say a phishing email comes in, and it looks very confusing for the start. Oh, there's a lot of sort of messages. And for a human brain, it's like, in confusion, you try to seek for clarity. So when a sentence pop up to, please transfer this amount of money to the CEO, and the mind just latch on and it's like, oh, okay, there's a clear instruction. Maybe I should do this. Like when you're attending a seminar and suddenly the lecturer says, please raise your hand and all that. And people just automatically just follow because they might not even be paying attention, but that spoke up. That's clear
right,
enough.
Just right.
Yes. So there's actually a lot of sense behind like why we need ecosystem players to actually collaborate with the private sector to protect and also educate the users and public at large, because psychologically it's so easy to just maneuver a social engineering attempt.
Yeah, I agree. And there's some people, that's the kind of the demand they expect on government is to keep people safe in that respect. If you think of like feudal Japan, that's why you would live in one place versus another. They were just a bunch of warring little factions. And part of why you live there is they would protect you from the bandits. So you can farm your land and raise your family in peace and go to the market and trade your goods. And that was like, that was your life. You had your farm, you made your goods, you go to market, you trade for what you don't have and need, and you would share what you had with the warriors that kept everybody safe. And that was really like the foundation, because the beginning of social hierarchy was whoever, we stopped being nomads, we figured out agriculture, we planted food. And since I'm growing the most food, I'm the king, because you want to eat, you're going to be my friend, right? And so, or you're going to trade for me for food, because if I've got food and you don't, you're hungry, right? You're going to help me out. You're going to do what I ask you to. You're going to trade with labor if you have to for food. And that was like, and then you got to keep it safe. And so the security part is like a fundamental to the fabric of society, keeping things safe. That's part of why we have police and all this. So if there's a way that people are now, bandits are able to slip in the night and empty your grandma's bank account, and she just thinks that there has been an error. Like I've seen some of these scams. I've watched some of these YouTube videos where they go to transfer money and then the guy will add an extra zero by accident on the screen and then be like, oh, I'm going to get fired. I was only supposed to refund you 100 and I refunded you 10,000 and blah, 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 blah. And so it's just things like that where they just, like you say, they play on people's emotions. Can you talk a bit about that? What this is probably maybe some of the meat and potatoes of what we should get into is, what are the biggest mistakes people are making right now that leave them the most vulnerable?
Multitasking.
So in what way?
Interestingly, mindfulness has a lot to do with stop, look, and think. When we don't process what we are doing and just simply following instructions because we are not being mindful about, okay, hold on a second, is this, am I supposed to receive this at this time and expecting it? Do I look and validate, like for example, if the CEO is making a request that seems out of place, do I validate it and call him or at least appear to say, I've received this from the CEO. Can I validate that? Because it's a huge amount. And for example, the MGM Las Vegas incident where you basically called the IT help desk to change your password. What could have been done is that the IT help desk could say, can I call you back at your landline to validate that it's really the person that you're speaking with, or just do some like validation of their identity, right? So when we are just following things without thinking through, like really trying to understand and rationalize it, being mindful about it, that's when things happen. So for example, like we didn't know before, we do conduct phishing simulations or practice for our employees on a very regular basis. In fact, like on a monthly basis, I probably receive like maybe four or more to a certain extent. The one time that I failed was because I was multitasking, right? Because I was just like doing having a lot of tabs open and all that. And I was like, okay, hold on a second. Like, and it was a very relevant question that they were asking, right? And so I thought that, okay, HR told me something like this. I should reply that I should just do the survey that they're asking me to, being a good employee that I am. So you see, especially out here in Asia, it's like people are more compliant. They are more likely to follow instructions as well. And so that's where it really kicks in. In fact, one of my client was just telling me that in Thailand, they have a rise in the scam calls from call centers. And one of the theory was that because of all the rules that Singapore government has been setting up, the attention has shifted to Thailand, where the people are also very courteous, very amicable, and well, not going to ask too many questions. They would just say yes, right? So that they will start to target culture, right? Like, where would people be most compliant and be most cooperative? So we really have to put on our thinking cap and rationalize it and not be afraid to voice out and check in. Is this supposed to be what's happening? The thing is that because cyber crimes is a thing of the more of the current like decade or so, when we were in school, no one really taught us about this.
Yeah.
Basically the teacher was like, no, wait for your turn. And it's like everyone's just compliant, right? And so now you got this whole mindset of, hey, I need to actually stop, look, and think. Like, how do you actually shift from non-habitual thinking to a habitual thinking, right? So if there's a book, Think Fast and Slow, that talks about the brain in system one and two, where system one is basically your habitual reactions, which is what the brain performs 95% of the time.
Right.
So you can imagine making the switch is going to be tough. So we need all the immersive nudges and environment that we can have in our own work and day-to-day environment. So that's something that organizations are finding a challenge to also craft it, because oftentimes it's IT who's leading that conversation. And when you talk about creating that immersive environment and culture, it really takes more than just IT to do it. So yes, the top thing you can do is to stay mindful.
Mindful, change passwords. And I like that you put validate strange requests, validate the sender email, contact the person directly to be like, hey, just like double, triple check. Things like, I know I'm working with an international team, one of my clients, and we have to constantly get the code to log in, right? That's the two-factor authentication. So we're constantly getting shared the code. But again, who, if you get a random request from someone, hey, do you have the code? Wait, who is this? Why are you asking for the code versus just sending it off? So like you say, mindfulness versus that trigger response. We also, it sounds like in this, there's another part of it where there's also, you talk about bad actors. A lot of people, there was the Cambridge, what was it called? The Facebook scandal. It was Cambridge something. It was a scam where they were using Facebook advertising to social engineer with social media. And the Twitter files on top of that, the White House has been pushing probably, and I would say very likely, all social media platforms to censor and control and information. So this all fits into cybersecurity, I think, to a certain extent, because one, you're trying to protect your data from, was it denial of service attacks, from brute force attacks, from phishing attacks. There's some now, just if you open emails or open text on your phone, you don't even need to click any links. People can take control of stuff. Especially with AI now, cracking passwords. I think everybody here needs to have a 16-character password with numbers, symbols, and upper lowercase letters. Like, it's just, the complexity is getting, it's getting there. It's getting deep.
Yeah.
Where do you see things going in 5, 10 years? Where do you see, 5, 10 years from now? Are you pro digital passport? How do we keep our data safe? Is this blockchain going to rescue us? What do you think is coming down the pipeline?
Well, if you think about it this way, cybercrime, if you go by the GDP or the value of it, is the third largest country. And That's huge. So you're going to get syndicates who's going to want to cash in on this. And in fact, just the other day, there was a ransomware syndicate that actually submitted an SEC filing about an organization that did not disclose their breach. Just because that organization didn't want to pay them, they actually submitted a filing to say that, hey, this organization didn't declare it. They should have declared it. They should get a penalty, maybe. So they're getting back at them, right? Like, they're so bold to do that.
Wow.
So you would see that, yeah, the bad actors, they are going to be bolder than ever. They are hiding behind technology.
Yep.
And the fact is, we can't outwin in terms of technology. The more you put on layers, they are always like, it's a case of bad
cat
cop,
and
good cop. They are forever chasing, right? Yeah. And that's the part. It's at the end of the day, some of those essentials lies with the human firewall. Because you could add on those layers of technology, but the last line of defense is actually the human, right? Because that's where they can't win over unless they're doing a social engineering attempt, which is where statistically, based on the Forrester research, I think it's about 2021 or 2020, about 3% of IT spend is actually on the human aspect. We are spending a lot more in all the other layers to actually protect organizations. You get email gateways and everything, right? But the fact of it is that the human is something that the bad actors would target because there's so little investment in them. And humans, if you know the psychological aspect of things, you know how to think about psychologists. And we were just talking about it the other day with my client as well. Probably have maybe studied some psychological module.
Right.
So that's a part, right? If we really want to make it successful in time to come, it's not just in terms of playing catch up in technology, but also making the organization and the public at large that last line of defense. So it's not even about employees of organization, because frankly speaking, wherever the organizations are doing, they have a lot of layers of protection. If I'm on my own personal device and I fall for such an attack, my own money out of my own wallet is still going to get stolen.
Right.
It's a personal loss.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I completely forgot, but I had something. A buddy of mine, an old client and a friend, I was a guest of honor at his wedding in Mexico. He gifted me some axes for this online crypto game, Axie Infinity. He was farming axes and making just stupid amounts of money at the point, like just stupid amounts of money, like just stupid, buy a Ferrari amounts of money farming these axes and selling them. Legitimate online business. At the time, I don't know what's happening with it now, but he gifted me a handful of them. I gave me a couple of teams, which in cash at the time was a couple thousand dollars worth of product. Now I had an issue because I wanted to get into breeding and I was trying to transfer funds into it. And I contacted the company, had their customer support on Twitter, and they were like, everything was just contact us on Twitter. So I contacted them on Twitter and replied to a tweet. And then I got a DM. And the profile and the username was the same, but the difference was an underscore. It's all it was. Difference was an underscore. And it was someone pretending to be their support. And I was such a noob to it and all that. I was like, sure, here's my seed phrases. And those actually were gone. That was it. And before you know it, it was gone. So I love what you talk about, the human firewall. Like really having what that taught me, and just to speak to what you're talking about, the human firewall, not just having a human firewall, but also probably having an offline firewall, like retro, what's old is new again, have a safe and put stuff in a safe. And if I have, for example, if I have a seed phrase for my thing, if I have to go into this safe, there needs to be a checklist of triple checks I'm doing before anything happens, right? Whereas if it's something just laying around in your computer or on your desk, it's really easy to, oh, here you go, right? Like you say, you're multitasking. Oh, here you go. And you just pass it to them and you don't think about it. So it almost sounds, I love that you mentioned that, like a human firewall. Like you almost need to have like a mental note that there's lines in the sand. And anytime I'm crossing one of these lines, I need to stop and ask. And it can be for accessing your online banking. It can be as simple as accessing a CRM, right? Accessing a CRM, accessing a company dashboard of some sort. It's different depending on the individual, right? What your intellectual property, if your company has a secret recipe for how you make your food, and then you want to go, somebody asks for the copy, like corporate espionage is real. you have to figure out what those lines in the sand are. And almost like you mentioned before, invest in time and training the team to go, hey, anytime something comes up, this is our process. Even if there's like support, like an online business recently, another different client, they have a Shopify store. We needed support from one of the apps that they use and they needed access to log it. They send an email. Oh, okay. We'll approve your access, but you have to double check that stuff, right? Triple check. So I really appreciate what you're talking about and the stat that cybercrime would be the third largest country in the world by GDP, because that is huge. And I hate that. I hate that so much. Because my personal philosophy is if any of these people get busted, they have lost reputation and face in front of their friends and family, their relatives. They won't be able to get an honest job again. And if they just did something that helped people, the same skill set, but applied to something that forwards people, it would, now they have something that like a long-term career. They could do 30, 40, 50 years. So that's my little soapbox rant. You triggered that. That memory, and I had to share it. I was like, I got scammed. That guy got me good too. Like the username, yeah. Photo, everything was good. He had the bio, but it was a little underscore.
It's really, we don't expect everyone to pay attention to all those tiny details if you don't know what to look for. So that's why the education is really important. And yes, it's already the largest economy after US and China. So in 2020, FBI actually received over 800,000 cybercrime related complaints with losses totaling over $10 billion. The top five is phishing, personal data breach, non-payment, non-delivery scams, extortion and pet support scams. So that's huge. And if you look at data, right, data is so valuable. It's being sold on the black market, right? The dark web, right? People are really selling. It's very valuable, especially like healthcare, financial data. But sometimes one of the LinkedIn feed errors I came across recently was, it's so easy to identify someone, especially if you're an employee, you got your laptop and you got the ID tag on the laptop. And you got your logo of the company, and if you have a water bottle with your name, it's so easy to go and find you in your company's like LinkedIn profile or page or something like that. And it's, okay, hold on a second, that's your email address. I'm going to try cracking your code and everything. That's the thing, though. So it's like, for us, it's like, we have not really practiced about how to handle our own data carefully as well. And we post about things all the time, right?
Yes. Hey, I'm going away this weekend. I'll be back in a week. And there's photos, but like now you're just telling if your profile is public, you're letting people know that, hey, my house is free to rob right now. That's a huge, hey, I'm going to be here at this place this time. There's scammer pickpockets and scam. There's 101. People don't realize that. And it's an interesting new problem to have. Can you list the top five again? I thought that was great.
Sure. That's a phishing, personal data breach. The third one is non-payment or non-delivery scams. Fourth is extortion. And the fifth is tech support scams.
Yeah, I got hit by the tech support. I've been hit by non-pay, non-deliver. Yeah. Non-pay, yeah, non-deliver.
That's really common too, especially with e-commerce.
Yeah. So yeah, phishing, personal data, non-pay, non-delivery, extortion. Now, what would extortion be? I guess that's, I got photos of you. I think that's probably what that is. In today's day and age of online dating, it's probably something like that. Like I got some photos that you don't want me, your grandma to know about.
So that's the thing about love scams these days, right? Like you're exchanging those romantic messages with people that you have not even met yet. And send across, oh, this is quite a nice photo, like very attractive and everything, that you're trying to like lure in this other person, but actually you're being lured instead, like hook in. Like, so that's the part, it can take all forms. Love scams is big out here, especially in Asia.
Oh, so, I'm in the Philippines. Like, we call them foreigner hunters out here. They're women that do it as a professional thing. They get a line of 10 guys sending money every month, and it's just a couple $100 here, a couple $100 there. You get 10 guys sending you $300, $400, $500. You're living free, and all you got to do is just chat with your long distance boyfriend. So that's a big business. There's a lot of lonely people. And I think in China, there's something like 30 million men that are never going to have a partner. because of the population control thing. So that's that one's probably going to be on the rise. It's probably going to hit the top five list pretty quick, I imagine. And it, much easier. Just find someone that you really mesh well with, can have long-term plans with, and just get married. That's a good strategy. Nothing wrong with that. What's old is new. Yeah.
It is.
Elizabeth, such a good call. I've got a couple pages of notes. I do want to be respectful of your time. And I want to ask, is there anything I haven't asked you about that I should have asked you about?
No. Usually people would be interested in personal development, like it's self-growth. For example, right, someone who has actually made so many changes and switches, because what I hear a lot out here in APAC as well is that when you're an Asian, usually you tend to be more reserved, right? So when you're making changes, be it company, be it engaging senior leadership, oftentimes someone isn't that bold. Right. So that's what I observe. And people have asked me before, what's that experience, right? How do I actually manage to like just go through, or rather have this very diverse background and have this forward-looking vision and mindset? So sometimes people would tend to ask that, what's so different about me if compared to the average Singaporean or the average like Asian? So I'm not trying to stereotype, but I'm just stating out that's actually a cultural difference, the way that we are brought up and everything.
Yep.
So back to that whole approach of mindfulness and also looking at who are the people who believe in me. So you haven't quite asked about the personal life, which I want to give credit to my husband as well. So that's a part, right? Like fun fact, we met on Tinder. So that wasn't a love scam. And it happened. I was started dating, and I was like the first one to actually say, do you have to date exclusively and try it and give it a shot? Because everything is just a short term on Tinder, right? And I had enough of that. So let's just make a decent effort. And that decent effort turned into finding someone who accept me for all my quirks and be there for me. And it's just this very nourishing, loving person who supports me. And when you have that kind of support, it's like you are able to actually make very bold and risky moves as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when, from a CSM, like customer success manager at Gartner, I took a bold move to have a leap of faith, went into a startup, and it was co-founders of Russians back then. Ukraine, that was before Ukraine war, right?
Right.
Yes. And that's where the opportunity to actually make it my own, to craft out a team, that wouldn't have happened if I didn't have the support, right? My parents are fantastic. But I would say that someone who really believes in you, and we are not always having like parents who would think out of the box, because mine are quite traditional as well. They would probably say, you got a very safe job, just stay there, do well at your organization. So there's a part whereby I would say that if anyone who's listening, if they want to have that support, first of all, that gave me courage to actually think about making bold moves as well. And then in that stage of like self-discovery, just really ramp up. And getting into a company that is a culture fit as well. So that is also really important, because over here, we call it like, this is a work home, you know, whereby everyone is full of radical transparency, complete honesty, and have fun while doing it.
Right.
You know, I love the culture here. So that's the thing, right? When you want to find a place to flourish, you find your support network, you find a company, the culture that really resonates, or you make it your own. And when you're there, be happy and just sow the seeds, and then you'll harvest later.
I love that.
So yeah, just put it out there, because we talk about being outcome driven all the time. I get it. It's this, you have to be outcome driven. You have to be smart about things and all that. But I do think fundamentally, the people around us makes a difference. The people I work with makes a difference. So I'm a people person.
Yeah.
And that's why that's important to me.
Yeah. No, success is a team sport. There's a saying, if you want to go fast, walk alone. If you want to go far, walk together. And everyone that I've talked to that's been very successful has a team that's helped them do it. If you just take the analogy, just a basic analogy I like to use, say somebody wants to go win a gold medal at the Olympics. Doesn't matter the sport. We'll pay like judo, something easy. Somebody wants to go win a gold medal in judo at the Olympics. They're going to figure it out on their own in a garage with some books and videotapes and a dummy practice on versus someone that gets a coach that has already won a gold medal, maybe even two or three coaches that are all past gold medal champions. One has a team that's of people that are all trying to go to the Olympics. Like, it's just a total night and day difference, right? Even if the person in the garage has a, maybe a buddy or two, it's not quite the same in terms of the caliber of people. So it really is, you really are the average of the five people you spend the most time with in a big way. It just depends. It doesn't mean you have to exclude people, but it does mean for my, the health part of health, wealth, love, happiness, right? And survival. Who are my top five health friends? Who are my top five wealth friends? Who are my top five love life friends or whatever, just friends to go and do stuff if you're single, to have a sense of belonging. And then who are my five friends that I talk to about things like trying to figure out how to survive and be prepared for tomorrow? And there can be overlap in those. But I think a lot of people, they just, like you talked about, they're not mindful about their lives and they zombie sleepwalk through what they're doing. And what they don't realize is that we are masters of this planet because we can take our thoughts, we can mold and shape ideas in our head and then make them reality. And a lot of people just don't use that power. They just have it, but they're so caught up in having their faces buried in their phone, constantly feeding themselves information versus just silence to think and observe. That's a powerful thing. Silence is as much music as sound is. Without pauses, there would be no melody. And so that mindfulness, that I think that's a really powerful thing. And the support network. I mean, in today's day and age, everyone's trying to be more and more individualistic. Well, a neighborhood, I live in a very nice gated community, very nice, well-to-do people here. And one of the biggest houses on the block has about 8 really nice vehicles, BMWs. Like I haven't seen a Lamborghini, but they've got, you name it, they've got it out front. And it's what I notice is that's like there's a Disney movie, Encanto, I think it is. That's the family house. They've probably got 3 or 4 generations in that one. And it's it's nice house. It's a nice mansion. Like, why people want to achieve fame and success? Okay, why do you want to be rich? So you can buy a mansion. Okay, so what? You can have a bunch of empty rooms, right? What is the point of having a 13-bedroom house?
Absolutely.
If it's just you, who's going to move in there? Your friends? You know what I mean? What, your friend? Have you ever lived with those friends before? So I think it comes back to, again, like, just anyways, I'm on a soapbox again. I'm going to get off, but I think it's just, this is just some, think about what your great grandparents value. And maybe pay attention to that. Think a little bit more before you act. Be mindful. Spend time training, focusing on the fundamentals, keeping things safe. As much as we push forward carefully, and watch out for those top five: phishing, personal data breaches, non-pay, non-delivery, extortion, and tech support. I think those are, that's just a great checklist for people to think of and be aware of.
Yeah, and I think any of if you're developing that personal growth mindset, that's great. So books, definitely another avenue, right? There's a lot of learning to be had. And in fact, Stu, our CEO, just showed us a clip that he found online that when you ask the billionaires, actually 85% of them are self-made. And what's a common denominator? They read a lot of books. And the guy that was interviewed, he said he read 50 books a year. So that's one book a week almost. So
they need to get the knowledge. They also have to have a tendency to act. That's something a lot. Some people, they get into mental masturbation where they think, oh, because I'm reading books, I'm more likely to be successful. But it's not just, you have to have, the book you don't read can't help you. True. Very true. The book you don't own, you can't read. And the book you don't read cannot help you. True. But the knowledge you have, there's plenty of broke, smart people. And it's because I have to be careful of this. I value knowledge. You mentioned that you're a learner. I value knowledge for knowledge. I just like knowing the real answers, the truth. I'm a fact finder. What is the truth of it? But you have to act on that info. You have to have the knowledge, and then you have to invest in taking action on it. And the purpose of the knowledge is to take the right action, to avoid delays, to take the best path forward. So, Carol, this is great. I feel like we could go on and do a whole nother interview. We'll have you come back. If people want to reach out, if they want to get in touch, if they want to continue the conversation, what are some of the best ways for them to connect with you?
LinkedIn. That's a professional network platform.
That's right.
And you have a messaging tool as well.
That's right. That's right. So you can look her up, Caroline Sue, Caroline Soo, We found the right one if she's in Singapore at No Before. Caroline, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been an honor and a pleasure. And I know that you've got your own followers, your own family, your own direct reports, your own priorities. Thank you for coming, sharing with my audience and I, so we could all be a little bit better prepared for the future.
You're most welcome, Daryl. And it's a message is stay cyber safe.